The Internet, the final frontier.
Hello there, you're listening to Boldly Going Nowhere. It's a podcast, you listen to it with your ears. In today's episode, I'll have a review of the album Boys and Girls by Alabama Shakes. And in BG at the Movies, we'll review Wreck-It Ralph. I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakamas.
I'm Sean Holmes.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we are Boldly Going Nowhere. So if you didn't figure it out from the really obvious musical cues,
yes.
We do have some opinions about Disney's acquisition of Lucasfilm, because who doesn't? We're on the internet. And, well, I'll just go ahead and start, being that I usually do, by saying that I am a huge Star Wars fan. If I had a, quote, fandom, it would be Star Wars, but I'm not the type to obsess over any one particular property or franchise to the exclusion of others. But if there's one franchise, you know, film or book or otherwise, that means a lot to me, it's Star Wars. You know, when I was middle school, high school, I read the Expanded Universe novels, you know.
Thrawn trilogy. Yeah.
Action figures. The
Timothy Zahn's Law.
Yes.
Yeah. The classic, was it Kenner? Made the action
figure. Oh, that's a good question. Was it Kenner?
Yeah, the classic Kenner action figures. Star Wars encyclopedias.
I had the AT-AT from Empire Strikes Back, from the original 1980s one.
Yeah.
It was my brother's. Me and my older brother, Christian, he bought that back in the 80s. And then me and my younger brother, Ian, later in the mid-90s, when we were kids, played with it and beat the ever-loving shit out of it.
Yeah. So, and even before Lego and Star Wars were closer than Tim Burton and Johnny Depp, I was still building Star Wars ships out of my Legos, because that was pretty much the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah, who didn't?
Didn't matter if it was Lego Castle, Lego Pirate, Lego Adventure, whatever. You're building spaceships out of it.
Yeah.
Once you've built the original model and you got tired of that, you're going to build a spaceship. That's just what you do with Legos. That and spend 20 minutes digging through a barrel of Legos trying to find the one piece that you can never find.
Yeah.
But we're not here to talk about Legos. We're here to talk about Star Wars and the fact that good old Disney is putting their stamp on it.
Yeah. I have mixed feelings on the matter. I think the consensus opinion has been that, well, I mean, people are a little iffy about more Star Wars films, but they're like, well, Disney made the Avengers work. Why can't they make this work?
Right.
Well, it's because it's been hinted at that this particular, there's been nothing definitive yet, but they've hinted at that these new set of films won't involve any of the characters from A New Hope, Empire, and Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
So there won't
be... Which is largely disappointing. So that means they can't do Heir of the Empire, Dark Force Rising, or... it's Dark Force Rising and Last Command. They can't
right.
do the Thrawn trilogy.
Which I find is extremely... extremely disappointing, and B, it's a huge loss on their part, because
well, let's
they could still use original actors if they not didn't go with the Thrawn trilogy because that's 5 years afterward, but the Corellian trilogy, which is 14 and a half years later.
Well,
then,
because
then they're appropriately aged already, and you don't have to do much makeup.
But first and foremost, one, they can adjust the timeline as necessarily as possible.
Hold on a second. Let's back up. For those who are listening, might not be as well versed in Star Wars and the expanded universe. The trilogy in question we're talking about is known collectively as the Heir to the Empire trilogy, or the Thrawn trilogy. Heir to the Empire being the first book written by Timothy Zahn. The reason these books get Star Wars fans really excited is not only because they are probably the best written Star Wars books in general. They're actually well-written books. It's not just saying they're well-written for a Star Wars book. They're actually well-written books because...
Yeah. That's, like, what is it? The Courtship of Leia, and then I think Heir to the Empire was one of the Thrawn books that was considered to be canon.
Yes, and Timothy Zahn himself has weighed in on all of the speculation, and has basically said... He has no expectation that they would use his material, and furthermore has no expectation that they would consult him if they were going to. He would love to be, you know, if they want me, I'll fly out to Lucas Ranch. I'll take a charter plane if they want me to come out there and consult on it. But if they don't, they have no reason to. I mean, they have no...
Right, and the major complaint I've heard about against, you know, continuing on with their story is like, well, the actors are too old. Well, I mean, again, it's just because it's in you know, the novelization takes place 5 years after the end of Return of the Jedi. It's a film. You can adjust the timelines from the novel into the film. Or, I don't know, did any of you guys see the Curious Case of Benjamin Button?
Yeah.
They did a lot of, you know, they did a lot of de-aging stuff with Brad Pitt. They made him basically from a 40-year-old into a 17-year-old. And, I mean, obviously you're going to see some of the issues there. I mean, if you're really looking. But, I mean, we can forgive a little bit of CGI if we can, you know, A, get back Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill in those roles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, I
mean, do you want to relive, like, what Tron did? The new Tron?
I wouldn't mind that.
I mean, because the clue was obviously CGI.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I think we, as Star Wars fans, would be willing to forgive a great deal of CG chicanery if we get the Thrawn trilogy.
Yeah, which I'd love to see.
Yeah.
They're just full of iconic characters that have now become just as, you know, as much staples of Star Wars as any ones that were actually in the movies.
Another thing is that, you know, Anakin is the sole defining character in the prequel trilogy. Luke is the sole defining character in the original trilogy. So, who's to say? I mean, because you obviously know it's going to be the kids are going to be the main focus of the new film if they were to use material from the Thrawn trilogy.
Right. Well, Timothy Zahn himself said that the best possible scenario would be to set the films shortly after the Thrawn trilogy so that we get to see all three generations of basically, you know, the original characters.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's what
Luke's
we want.
Luke's kids,
Han and Leia's kids.
Yeah. And then maybe even set it farther enough that maybe their kids are in it.
Yeah.
So that the original characters are just barely there, just kind of as a token, like,
exactly,
to pay respect to them. But they're basically, you know, they're elderly, they're grandparents.
Yeah, I was like, the idea is the first film would have them as the mentor characters and then just basically introduce a way to sort of shoo them out of the story.
Yeah.
And then that way the new characters take over, which I'd be fine with that. As long as they paid homage to the correct people, they'd be fine.
Yeah. But I also find it interesting, no one, you know, brings up any of the other expanded universe books that would also be, you know, potential candidates, I think, for a continued Star Wars story, such as Jedi Academy trilogy.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
which I think is also a really great trilogy.
Who
and
was
also
the one on Kevin
Kevin J. Anderson.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that's a really pivotal trilogy as well, because it's about Luke Skywalker reforming the original Jedi Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And all the, you know, stuff he has to go through to try and find new Jedi candidates.
Yeah.
But in terms of, you know, having a villain as iconic as Thrawn,
yeah,
it's you're probably that that's you're not going
to
find.
Yeah. Pass up.
And then the only thing I just hope they don't do, which I'm sure they won't, but the one thing I fear is that they jump even farther ahead and do stuff from New Jedi Order, which that's where I stopped reading expanded universe novels, because basically it got to the point where, like, I had read pretty much all the ones I could get my hands on. And then the New Jedi Order, the first one that came out, I'm trying to remember what it was called. Let me look it up for a second.
All right, well, in the meantime, there have been a lot of speculation. I believe George Lucas has gone on record saying that he's going to donate all the proceeds from this sale to an educational foundation, which, I mean, hey, kudos to him. And Jordan has actually made a point stating that, you know, if George continues, you know, on this trend of doing things like this, you know, people might actually, by the time he dies, people might actually like him again, which it is a definite,
couldn't hurt.
Yeah.
It's a definite possibility.
Anyways, so Vector Prime.
Yes.
Came out in 1999,
right.
Written by a well-noted fantasy author, R.A. Salvatore. Mm-hmm. So when that came out, I, you know, ran, snatched it up, read it, was not really excited about it, because the Yuuzhan Vong, I'm not even going to get into them. You'd have to be a really huge Star Wars nerd to even care about the Yuuzhan Vong. But as soon as I finished reading Vector Prime, I felt like I went back to the bookstore, and there were like 10 more books on the shelf. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? It's like everyone was releasing their own new Jedi Order books. There were between, oh my god, like 21 novels were published in the new Jedi Order in the span of 3 years.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So I just gave up. I'm like, I'm going to stop reading these Star Wars books and maybe try and have something of a social life. I don't know. It's a crazy it's a crazy idea.
It's crazy.
Maybe just crazy enough to
man.
Work.
I'm done with these Star Wars novels. I'm going to go have a sex life.
Yeah. Well, that didn't
Thanks,
really
Lucas.
Happen either, but I can't blame Lucas for that. I can't blame Star Wars.
Oh,
for
you
that.
Can blame him.
It didn't help, but you know. Honestly, the best thing like Star Wars related that has come out in the last decade is by far the Genndy Tartakovsky
Clone Wars series,
which consists of 3 seasons of basically short cartoons. Like, we're talking about like 3 minutes long, basically played between regular shows on Cartoon Network.
Mm-hmm.
But so good. I mean,
I know.
Just the Jedi action in there, like, it introduced General Grievous,
yeah.
Like, before you saw him
in episode three,
you actually got to learn about General Grievous in the Clone Wars series, and he was way more badass. Like, he came off as a total pussy in the movie.
I know, and it was.
Whereas
that was
in the Clone Wars series,
lost.
They show General Grievous taking on like 6 Jedi at once and whooping all of their asses.
Yeah, it was so cool too. I loved like that the cartoon you're talking
about.
The
I'm talking about the Clone Wars,
really,
and not the very extremely shitty like CGI Clone Wars
movie.
Series.
Yeah, no, I thought you were talking about.
No,
the
it's
movie.
The actual no the series.
Okay,
the Clone because there's another cartoon series
there's
called
the
Clone Wars.
No, we're talking the 2D Genndy Tartakovsky.
Yeah,
right.
2D.
We're talking about the 2D. They're like 3 minute long.
Really good stuff.
Yeah,
and you know introduced. Anakin Skywalker had a sort of rival Dark Jedi that he was up against, Asajj Ventress. And they had, I mean, one of the most epic lightsaber duels you will ever see in, you know, film, show,
All right.
In any medium.
Well, here, let's go ahead and get this settled down because, you know, this is a point of contention. What's your favorite lightsaber duel? Let's start with Justin. Go.
The one between Anakin and Asajj Ventress is pretty awesome because they were basically like in this sort of ruined temple in this forest. But if I'm going to go with ones that people have actually seen, like in a movie.
It doesn't have to be that. It can
the lightsaber duel from episode one at the end. Say what you will about episode one because there's obviously plenty of terrible things we can say about it. The one thing they did get right with that movie was having an awesome lightsaber duel.
I was happy to see that in 3D. That was the only thing, one of the only things I liked about it. I was like, ooh, yay.
Yeah.
All right, Sean, favorite lightsaber duel, go.
One. It has to be one.
Episode one?
Yeah, episode one, even though
it's the song, right? It's Duel of the Fates.
Well, yeah, it's really good background, and plus, I think the lightsaber duel just he had double sided lightsaber.
Right.
What's not the like?
It's the first
about
time
that?
Seeing like a non standard lightsaber.
First time seeing
a
non standard lightsaber. Uh-huh. You got two guys against one, and it's awesome.
I don't
blame
you.
Really good.
I don't blame you.
The things that I don't like about the four, five, and six. Lightsaber duels are okay until Return of the Jedi, and that's when it gets good. But when it's between him and Darth Vader, I think.
I actually disagree with you. My favorite lightsaber duel of either the new series or the old series has to be the lightsaber battle from The Empire Strikes Back, Vader versus Luke. Because, I mean, it starts off, Luke is just basically getting schooled for the first 2 minutes, and Vader's like, man, got this, boop, and then Luke just does like a 20-foot backflip out of nowhere. He's like, the fuck? And then Luke and him just basically go at it, and Luke's looking like he's getting the upper hand, and then out of nowhere, Vader's just like, oh, you cut me in the arm. Oh, is that how we're gonna do things? Alright, fine, I just lopped your hand off. Pussy.
Yeah. So, what it all comes down to is that there might be people out there who are not as big Star Wars fans, they're saying, why are you going on about the expanded universe? Like, who gives a shit about some, you know, the books and stuff? Like, really, shouldn't we only care about the movies? But the thing is, even Lucas himself draws from the expanded universe. For example, going back to the Thrawn trilogy, those books were the first time that the capital planet, the Imperial planet, which we now know as Coruscant, was actually named mm-hmm. Coruscant. That's the first time that name appears. It doesn't appear
They didn't mention it in the
movies.
Original films.
Which, once, you know, episode 1, 2, and 3, you notice they're calling it Coruscant. Mm-hmm. Like, Lucas read these books, and he loved them just as much as all of his fans did. So,
I will say, here's a point of contention, and then I think we're going to move on to your
next
review. But I think this is something, I think as a conciliatory measure to all the old fans, now that Disney owns the rights to Star Wars, hopefully now they'll see the fact that they stand to make a shitload of money if they will release the original cut of the trilogy.
I don't want to see any more re-releases, personally, but...
I mean, it's just, at least give us the option, okay, you can either buy the new cuts, or you can buy the old cuts.
I'm sure they will.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying, I don't want to see any more additions to it, but if they do, give the fans of the old movies the option to buy the old ones. That's the ones we want to watch. I guarantee you'll have people lined up around the block, waiting to buy them.
Yeah, I would.
Hell yes! Alright, but anyway, that's enough talking about Star Wars. We're going to move it on to Justin's album segment.
Yeah, well, the only thing I wanted to just wrap up that conversation is just because the whole thing was, what's your opinion on Disney buying Lucasfilm? The thing is that I don't have that much of an opinion on Disney acquiring Lucasfilm. I have lots of opinions on them making more Star Wars films. But when it comes to Disney acquiring Lucasfilm, Disney's a business. They're not really going to have that much of a creative influence on what happens. And I'm not, you know, really a huge fan of a lot of Disney's business practices. I mean, the thing with Disney is it's a lot like Apple and Google in that a lot of people don't want to criticize them just because they make products that everyone enjoys. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean they don't still have, you know, business practices that we should take a second look at.
Yeah, but...
And Disney more than its fair share.
Yes, but we can say that in the last 6 to 7 years, Disney has been primarily responsible for putting out some pretty decent superhero films.
Right, but Disney isn't making the films. That's
well,
the thing.
See, that's the thing. They own Marvel, which
right.
Marvel's
it's a they're a conglomerate. They are a business. They're a conglomerate. They're one. They're a media industry. They're
yes.
a giant.
Yes, they're basically the ones pumping the money.
Right,
which is fine.
It's like saying Viacom has anything to do with what actually goes on MTV. It's like they're not creating the shows. They can tell them what to put on and what not to put on, but they're not the ones actually making the shows.
Yeah, that's true.
So when it comes to Disney buying Lucasfilm, I don't really care what Disney does. It's what's Lucasfilm going to do. Right. So
yeah.
Time for my music segment.
Vintage.
which I'm going to talk about an album I've been wanting to talk about for a while. I mean, it's certainly been out long enough. Came out in April of this year. And this is the album Boys and Girls by Alabama Shakes. It's actually, there's no the. I was calling it the Alabama Shakes, but this song might be familiar if you had the radio on at any point this summer.
Totes.
And this is their single, Hold On.
Obs.
It's Black Keys, but add an apple white tone to it. It feels like an iPod.
You think it sounds really white?
No. I'm saying
it's loose for white
music they use in the iPod commercials. Right?
Oh, okay.
You know,
I didn't
like that type of indie music has that indie feel. Like it's going somewhere. It looks hip. It looks cool. You looks like you want.
Yeah, it's
part of that music.
It's the music that's got that indie cred, but it's still commercially marketed.
Okay, yeah. Sure, okay, I just thought you were saying that
like Black Keys. Like, essentially.
Black Keys has become commercially marketed. They didn't start out that way.
No, they did not.
Whereas this is their first album. So they've only been together since 2009. Like, they are pretty much immediately got media attention. Alabama Shakes formed in Athens, Alabama in 2009. So the lead singer, Brittany Howard.
Is a chick? That's a chick, really?
I need to turn it up.
I'm sorry. At first hearing this, I thought it was a dude.
That's okay. Well, that's why I have you here. Hold on. What? Okay. Now that you know it's a chick, what do you think she looks like? I know I hate to play this game. Like, what do you think? But I'm just curious. What do you think she looks like?
I don't know. Is she Stevie Nicks looking?
No.
No. Okay. I don't know. What does she look like?
Well, I'll just show you. Because I'm wondering if it's going to be surprising to you, or you'll be like, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Okay, no, that's not surprising.
Yeah.
See, that makes more sense now.
Exactly.
Okay, this is... When I say... Okay, I'm sorry. That sounded a little mean at the get when I said that. I'm just saying... When I first
No, I mean, it's rock and roll,
song,
man.
Yeah.
There's chicks sound like dudes. Dudes sound like chicks. It's all good.
Yeah.
But I really love her voice. I mean, it's really soulful. And I was thinking about this when I was starting to come up with my review for this. And I thought, you know, isn't it curious that almost always when people are talking about a singer who's soulful, yeah, be careful with those hot pierogies. Whatever, we've wasted enough time. I just want to get on with this. I was thinking about this, and I'm like, the very first word that comes to my mind when I hear her voice is soulful. But it occurred to me, is like, it seems like when people talk about a singer being soulful, they're almost always talking about a singer who is African American.
Yeah.
Or what? Or they're talking about a singer like a white person who sounds African. For some reason, soulful gets connotated with being black.
Well, I mean, they did create soul music.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can
understand. I'm merely just saying it's curious to me. I'm not trying to rule one way or another.
Yeah.
But anyways, her voice is really soulful.
No,
it's got
good.
A lot of emotion. It's raw. It's very raw. Mm-hmm. Like their sound.
Yeah. Oh, I like it.
But as the album goes on, it gets a little less raw, and it gets into what I would kind of describe as Southern rock version of Florence and the Machine. Which, if you're familiar with Florence and the Machine, I really like Florence and the Machine too. I mean, I like a strong female singer with a really kick-ass rock band behind her. Because then you have moments of sort of just of emotion, and then you have moments where it just balls out to the wall. Really driving guitars, bass, drums. It's a great combination. So this is track two, I Found You, but I'm going to go ahead and skip to the title track from this album, Boys and Girls, and see how it changes a little bit. So this is track eight, how the sound changes up a little bit as we get further into the album. Because Hold On starts, it's a very simple song, very simple riff, but it really catches you. But as they progress through the album, they also get a little more complex in the arrangements and writing, which makes sense, because they actually start out, Brittany Howard and the bass player, Zach Cockrell, actually start out playing progressive rock before they moved on to playing roots rock. They keep just a taste, just a little trace of that prog rock influence. Another reason I love it. But really, it's just, it's her voice. So what I also love about the singer Brittany Howard, I've heard interviews with her, and she's exactly what you would expect, like just her personality from her singing voice. Like she's, smoking, drinking, just I don't give a shit, let's get in some fights just for fun. So this is a great album to crank for the driving, for a listening party, I think it would be good.
You know, I'm kind of getting tones of Grace Lick from Jefferson Airplane.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. I mean, definitely, she's definitely got a more soulful tone to her voice, but I'm just like, her pauses, her inflection. It kind of reminds me a lot of Jefferson Airplane.
I think it reminds me more of a softer version of female Jack from the White Stripes.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because Jack White has become very involved with this band. So recently, Jack White tapped them to launch a series of singles for Third Man Records, which is his album record label that he's founded in Detroit. Jack White kind of fell in love with this band. And you brought up Grace Slick. I was going to say Janis Joplin.
I mean, yeah.
Also in terms of personality type. Yeah. Like, Janis Joplin would drink Southern Comfort on stage.
Yeah, so did Grace Slick.
Yeah. And,
I could see a Janis Joplin comparison. Because...
Yeah, I definitely... Yeah.
She has that soulful, like... It's not exactly whining, but it's more like wailing.
Music writer John Perelli's New York Times also compared her to Janis Joplin.
Yeah. I'm not the only one seeing the comparisons.
Yeah. So, they started out playing cover songs of Led Zeppelin, James Brown, Otis Redding. Pretty much exactly what you would expect. So. It's really, I think, a straightforward process.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just that I think, maybe it sounds cheesy to say it, but I think America was ready for a band like this, this year, this summer.
Yeah, it's this, what it is? It's just that music is cyclical.
But yeah, the distortion on the vocals is definitely Black Keys-ish or White Stripes. So, This being only their first album, I can only imagine that they're going to see a lot of great things.
I would definitely pick
up
on them. Okay, I will say this much. I know this is your segment, but I wanted to bring up a bit of music-related business that I found out the other day.
By all means, you do that.
Okay.
I'm going to enjoy this pierogi.
All right. Remember when we went to go see the They Might Be Giants and Jonathan Colton at the 930 Club? Mm-hmm. What was it? Last year? Was it last year?
It was last year.
Okay. We went to see them, and they played a song off of an album they said they made for kids. I remember commenting on it then that, you know...
They've made a couple.
Right. I was like, they make kids' albums? And we were listening to the song. I was like, wow, this is really good. Why haven't we heard this, right? Well, the other day I was on Spotify. God bless Spotify.
That's what I'm using right now.
Yeah. Well, I was on Spotify the other day, and believe it or not, their album, or at least the one they were playing that song from, Here Comes Science.
Yeah.
The whole album's on Spotify. I listened to the whole thing. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember hearing anything about it when it came out.
Well, you have to remember, They Might Be Giants have put out a lot of albums.
Yeah, I know.
Like, they put out a lot of music. I haven't listened to even half of their discography.
No, I know, but
they're very
the
prolific.
This got nominated for a Grammy.
Well, you're also just not in touch with the music scene.
Hey, shut your cake hole.
No, I'm sorry to play the part of the music snob on the show, but I knew about Here Comes Science before we went to their show. Like, I'd known about...
Why didn't you tell me?
I didn't realize you were as big a They Might Be Giants fan. I didn't realize you were that big a fan of them.
I have a fact here. Did you know something?
The Yeah Yeah Yeahs played in my living room in, like, 2001, so...
That's a fact.
I wish I could have been there.
Wow.
Lucky well, you,
you
know,
man.
It's really...
Obvs.
I wish I could have been there. I would have worn my best sweater vest, brought some.
You should tweet that.
Would have brought my NPR tote bag.
Totes.
Just filled with hash oil.
Is this organic?
Okay.
You guys like patchouli?
Vintage.
Anyway, so. Anything else you wanted to mention about
this
album?
No, I'm ready to talk about movies, man.
Okay, I am
too. Kick down the music.
All right, well, we enjoyed listening to them, but go ahead and listen to the rest of the album. It's really awesome. And,
Alabama Shakes, Boys and Girls.
Can't give a... Boys and Girls is the name of the album. For some reason, I thought it was a self-titled album, but it's called Boys and Girls. They had a self-titled EP, but... Yeah, it's awesome. Can't give a more eloquent description than that. All right, let's talk about movies.
Oh, yeah. I think we should. There we go.
Well, you know, it's Hollywood movies. No, it's BG at the movies.
Oh, it is BG at the movies.
Appropriate intro music. Anyway, so today in theaters, we went to go see a little gem of a release.
Oh, it was a gem, all right. I loved it. I thought from what I expected of it, mm-hmm. and from what I saw, there it impressed me.
So we know what your opinion of the movie is. Why don't we say what the movie? Is?
Well, the movie is Wreck-It Ralph.
I'm gonna wreck it. I'm gonna wreck it.
I'm gonna wreck it.
Anyway, yes. Surprisingly enough, it John C. Reilly and his besides Walk Hard, anyone remember right, any
yeah,
leading role he had?
Now, remember, just watch as a stage the
lead
actors.
Role
on the stage, the actors. Imagine them walking onto stage, and see if that would be delightful or your emotions from that movie. John C. Reilly, and then Sarah Silverman.
Nah, I would have left by that point.
And was it what's her name?
Jane Lynch.
Jane
Lynch from Glee. Yeah.
And Jack McBrayer
from
30 Rock.
From 30 Rock. Yeah. And Alan Tudyk.
None of us even realized was in the movie.
And what's his name from Firefly?
The only person who realized that he was in the movie was Jordan. Which, as soon as he heard, Alan Tudyk's character talk, he was like, oh. It's like, I loved you in Firefly.
Really? Because, you know, it's sad when I heard... his character is King Candy. The first when I first heard him speak, my first thought was Andy Dick.
Yeah, you know what? That's
because
very
in Clone
true.
High, in Clone High,
it was Alan Tudyk doing a very good Andy Dick impersonation.
In Clone High, Andy Dick is does like a very similar voice.
Mm, nice. Paul Lind.
I know. I think
yeah,
he,
a little bit of that.
Me, he reminded me like of the doorman in Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
Well, a lot of Wizard of Oz references.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and talk about the movie itself. The movie is fairly standard plot of, you know, basically a bad guy, you know, tired of his lot in life.
Right.
But the twist of it is this all takes place in video game cabinets. And they're presented with their own little world. They're presented as their own little world, as explained with Ralph, the titular character, basically describing his life and how he lives in a Donkey Kong / Rampage esque arcade cabinet called Fix-It Felix Jr.
Yeah. And of course, in Toy Story fashion, after all of the kids have left the arcade, all the humans are gone, then the arcade characters sort of have their own lives that they go about outside of their games.
Right, which is a very interesting concept to explore. But yeah, it's the main comparison is to go right to Toy Story, which I think is unfair because Nightmare. Oh, Jordan believes that the Nightmare Before Christmas is a far more
yeah
description. Yeah, for it.
And that you have a character who's sort of discontent with his station in life and aspires for something different or something more, but
yes,
that's also that's a common Disney theme in general. I mean, Little Mermaid.
I love how they're having a villains meeting, and like literally almost I would say almost every single big Nintendo to Genesis era villain is present in that meeting. You had Dr. Eggman from Sonic, Zangief and M. Bison from Street Fighter 2.
Yeah.
You had Bowser. You had one of the ghosts. The ghost from Pac-Man was the leader of the meeting.
Yeah. What I love about that scene and just in general, all those, whenever there's like, you know, in a movie or a cartoon or something, when there's like a group of people meeting in a circle,
mm-hmm.
every shot there's a new person in the group who you didn't see before, which is like how, where are these characters coming from? Like, they showed an establishing shot of the entire group and those characters weren't sitting there. Then they zoom to one particular section of the circle. Oh, there's three more people who weren't there before.
I mean, I love that they do that.
In
this case, it's understandable because, you know, half of them are zombies or ninjas, you know. People you normally wouldn't recognize, and you got to remember, half of the group are like these hulking behemoths.
Yeah, no, it's just a thing they do. It's not even anything particular to that movie. It's just I always find that entertaining because
the
number of people in the group changes with every shot. That's
yes.
Here's just something that I thought was interesting because all the games lead into like basically their transportation device. They're kind of like their portal, if you will, is. Their Grand Central Station is a power
yeah,
power strip. And I just thought, well, kids from this movie, will they start like messing around with power strips and getting electrocuted because, you know, American kids are idiots? Like, that was my first initial thought when I watched that.
Well, I think what we decided was the most depressing thing about this movie is that millions of kids are gonna walk out.
Son, there's no arcade.
And their parents are going to have to explain that there are
arcade.
No more arcade games.
Daddy, I want to go play an arcade. I'm sorry, son.
Unless we drive to Ocean City or Wildwood, it's not going to happen.
I'm sorry, son. I'm sorry, son. They're as dead as the Spice Girls.
I mean, if you know a mall that still has a pocket change.
What about Scary
Spice? If either of you guys know a mall that still has pocket change in it, maybe. I mean, maybe pocket change will get a revival.
Right.
If they still are around.
No, they're not.
Because I think Fredericktown Mall was the last one I could think of.
The only place
here.
I can think of that has anywhere close to resembling an arcade that's not a movie theater is Shadowland, that laser tag place over at the mall.
Yeah, those are probably the only places. Miniature golf places, go-kart places, laser tag places, and those are just sort of ancillary.
You can't be a standalone arcade,
right?
You have to have,
in terms of standalone arcade, so my family we used to go.
Dave and Buster's.
We used to go vacationing up in Wildwood, New Jersey, almost every summer. And Wildwood had a ton of arcades. Personally, I think Wildwood, in terms of its boardwalk, is a lot better than Ocean City. It's a lot longer a boardwalk, and they have a lot more stuff on there. But within the last couple of years, the last time we went to Wildwood, all of the arcades, they had replaced almost all of their arcade machines with just claw machines. Like, that was it. It was really weird. Like, you walk into an arcade, and it's just 50 claw machines.
Yeah, and
because it makes more money.
It makes more money, and B, it's not as hard to fix.
Yeah, it's just really,
sad.
It is really sad. It's the same reason, like when I was at, we had a discussion when we were at MAGFest, and I was like, man, I wish there were more pinball machines here. But it's like, yeah, do you have any idea how expensive pinball machines are?
Pinball machine parts?
Yeah,
There's so many different parts and so many different things to go into.
You notice there weren't any. I mean, I don't know how you would make anthropomorphized pinballs, but yeah, there's no pinball machines in this movie. So,
mm-mm.
Well, yeah, because they knew that was like because arcade games are a lot easier to make.
All right, well, here let's go around the table. Let's get a couple of opinions. Okay, favorite game reference, Justin.
Ooh, come back to me. I got to think about that one.
All right, well, Sean.
I think the Mario themes, like when he's looking through the box of Lost and Found, and he picks up the mushroom. And he just kind of threw. And then there's the one he picked up the exclamation point. I forgot what game that was from. By
Metal Gear Solid.
I thought those were pretty interesting. I love those references.
Yeah, that was pretty good. They said that Mario wasn't in the film. But did anyone else realize that the Tapper's bartender looked exactly like Mario?
Almost.
He did look very similar. He always looked like that. Yeah. But, yeah.
Wait, that was an actual arcade game?
Oh, yeah, Tapper? Tapper was an actual game.
It was actually at MAGFest.
No.
It was at MAGFest. You should check it out.
Oh,
yeah,
I'll check it out next year.
A lot of vegan characters had mustaches because it was easier to define them with pixels than it was to define their mouths.
Yeah.
That would make sense. Let's see. My favorite video game reference, I have to admit, comes fairly early in the film. It's Ken and Ryu from Street Fighter. They're fighting, and they're like, sure you can. And then you see they find out the arcade's closed. It's like, all right, that's enough of that. Ken, you want to go to Tapper's? Well, only if you're paying. And they just walk off. <I'm> like, really? Just went from, like, all-out fighting. It's like, hey, want to go get a beer? Okay. Fair enough.
That's awesome.
That was good.
I really liked the Q-Bert.
Yes.
And his pals.
Oh, yeah. Q-Bert was... My Q-Bert knees is a little rusty.
Yeah.
Favorite moments of the film? I will say this much. There is one moment of the film, and now we're going to move to a different category. Favorite moments of the film?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, favorite moments.
I'll start. My favorite moment of the film is when they introduce... There's a part later on where Ralph gets transported into this really saccharine racing game called, what was it?
Sugar Rush.
He gets transported into this game called Sugar Rush, and this pixie-like character basically annoys him from the very start, played by Sarah Silverman. I will say this much. As much as I dislike Sarah Silverman as a stand-up comedian and actress, I didn't find her as bad as she normally is. I mean, there were points where her voice was starting to grate on my nerves, but I never was just like, you know what? I never was unsold from the movie as an overall by her, whereas otherwise I would have been.
Right.
But the part in question that I really thought was funny was they go to her where she lives. She lives because she's a glitch, quote unquote.
Glitch.
And so she can get to certain areas in the game where most of the people can't. Most of the other characters can't, and one of the bonuses is she glitches inside this mountain where there's a unfinished level, which is Diet Coke springs, and then right above it are stalactites made of Mentos, and I'm like, wow, that's not going to come into play later on in the game, in the movie.
The Diet Coke and Mentos thing, that was actually one of those jokes that they had in the movie where I was like, wow, they're actually a lot more clever with the material and the jokes in this movie than I would have given them credit for.
Right, because everyone was thinking, oh, this is a Disney animated film. That's going to be for kids.
Right, because,
what kid would know that?
Yeah. Like, I still wouldn't think that, like, everyone knows about Diet Coke and Mentos. I mean,
I know there are plenty of videos showing the otherwise on the internet, but still, it's mostly adults doing that. You don't see kids doing that. But, I mean, still, I thought that was hilarious, and the way it plays out at the end, which I won't give away because it's quite humorous, but...
Yeah. And my favorite moment is one particular joke, which I'm not going to give away because it's a really, it's a visual gag.
Can you give us a hint to it?
The guards at King Candy's castle.
Yes.
Yeah. I won't say any more than that, but that cracked us up. Yes. In fact, I'll just say in general.
That was one of my favorite moments as well.
Okay. I don't want to spoil that joke because it's probably my favorite joke in the movie. It's so dumb, but it's brilliant.
It's an homage to another film. Which won't be as funny to
remaking.
Those. Yeah, won't be as funny to
which,
those
yeah.
who are. Yeah, it won't be
which
as funny
Disney
to those
remaking.
Who are under the age of say 20.
Yeah,
because they won't get it.
Well, I think kids will still like it just because it's an adorable like image. But
right, but they won't get the joke.
They won't get the reference. They'll still find it funny just because hey, it's cute. But that actually goes a lot. I was really surprised with how far they ran with all of the candy jokes. I really thought like they've got to be running out of.
Nope.
Candy-related jokes by now. I'm like,
nope.
they're really going for it, man. They are going to knock it out of the park.
I'll give this joke away because it's not much of a joke, but when he was like, what game did you come from? Hero's Duty. And then she starts crying, and then Sarah Silverman just goes, I almost had the exact same reaction I would have had because I have simple humor like that. And and I was like, okay, now I can't look at Call of Duty the same way again.
Yeah. Oh, hi, Jordan Hazel here.
Oh, hello.
First of all, I guess I should say that they named the extremely Gears of War style video game Heroes Duty just to put that ball on the tee for Sarah Silverman to say duty. I would have called that game Sprockets of Conflict, but really, just one quick thing, and I'll yield the floor again. I just want to say this because I feel like I'm probably the only person in this room who would say this. We're watching the credits, and we're glad we did. Unfortunately, there isn't really a extra scene at the end, but still. But if you see this movie, stay to the credits to the end.
It's worth it for the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and because the music is what I was going to comment on. That there's the music credits stroll by, and it says Wreck-It Ralph by Buckner and Garcia. And I'm like, that sounds familiar. Who are those? Oh my God! The Pac-Man Fever people.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like they had a song in this. I didn't hear it, and I'm thinking, and I just immediately think to myself that in addition to Pac-Man Fever, these guys had an entire album of songs based on like Centipede or Frogger, mm-hmm. or all these other great early '80s arcade hits, and of course most of these songs are available on Rock Band now, and just as I complete this thought. Wreck-It Ralph by Buckner and Garcia plays, and it's so obviously a Pac-Man Fever kind of song. That's when I said to myself, okay, I already like this movie. These guys went the extra mile.
Yeah.
It's
just like brownie points.
This Fix-It Felix Jr. game is supposed to be 30 years old. And in this universe, of course, if it was that good, they would have a Buckner and Garcia song. So my hat is off to the fine folks at Disney behind Wreck-It Ralph. That is truly going the extra mile. They went above and beyond the call of duty.
Know your audience, and they did.
Yeah.
Yes, I will say that Wreck-It Ralph is definitely... I actually really want to go see it again. I probably will go see it in the cheaper theater, though, because there are films that I have yet to see that I really want to see. Looper and Argo stand up there. Jordan got to see Argo, which he's lucky.
And Looper.
And you got to see
Looper. Yeah, he saw Looper. Yeah. No, Jordan told me to go see Looper like 3 weeks ago.
We're going to try and see it next weekend, but if not, it's either going to be Looper, Argo, or we're going to review Skyfall. Either or.
You want to take
for a classic, old go back. Well, not it's not classic, but it's an old movie.
You want to take a small break and then come back and then wrap things up?
Sure.
Let's do that.
Certainly.
Today's show is brought to you by Castwave Studios' Amazon page. Go to castwavestudios.com and click the Boldly Going Shopping tab and search for everything from Apple iPads to zebra striped Snuggies. Oh, it's so cozy.
It is.
This supports the studio and helps keep the lights on. Click the Boldly Going Shopping tab at castwavestudios.com.
And we're back.
Ah, such consumerism.
Yes.
Anyway, well, I think that just about wraps it up. Oh, actually, nope, scores. We got to give scores. Out of five, Justin, Wreck-It Ralph ranks a what?
I'd give it a 4.5 out of five. This is a really good movie.
Mm-hmm. All right, Sean?
4 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm going to rate it pretty high, too. I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5. In fact, I'm going to go further and say this is probably in my top five favorite movies for the year.
It's certainly the best thing that's come out of Disney in a long time.
And one thing...
Besides Avengers.
One thing I grabbed from all
this... I mean,
this,
it's an actual Disney movie.
Right.
It really made me want to go to MAGFest.
I know.
And I just I want to be there playing video games
like
now.
Right now, yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of the movies we're obviously going to have with us, or it's going to be there.
Oh, yes. And Jordan, if you didn't hear that, Jordan gives it a 4 out of 5 Turbo Times, which is an inside reference, but we're not going to spoil that for you.
Exactly. Yeah.
I will say yes. I would definitely gonna give it a 4.5 out of 5. I would say go see this movie while it's still in theaters. Definitely a lot of – it's not just a kid's film. I mean, even though there's a lot – it's, you know, cutesy animation. I mean, Pixar usually has a pretty good record of throwing enough inside humor that it's not overtly obvious to the kids. But yeah. The adult who got swindled, who basically got strong-armed into going to see this movie with their kids, they're going to be like, wait, did they just make a joke
wait,
that
what?
We got?
No, I think I can safely say you'll actually enjoy this movie even more if you're an adult because all these classic video game references. There's one thing I find curious, and this isn't a comment on the movie. It's a comment on, I guess, culture itself, because it's interesting now that in a kid's movie – and I'm pretty sure this was this rated G or PG?
G, I believe.
Gosh, where's the rating on it?
I want to say PG because of the heart being pulled out.
Well,
oh,
that
yeah.
And just like the whole Hero's Duty section, like probably I can't think of another Disney movie where we're gonna see this many guns being fired. Like that might seem like a subtle thing, but the fact that probably even 10 years ago for a kid's movie to have like basically a playoff of Battlefield Starship Troopers
mm-hmm.
in a game, like
yeah.
you know, guns and like bugs like exploding into goo. I'm just thinking like that's like pretty violent for a kids movie.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's interesting that we can get away with that now in a
mm-hmm.
rated
well it's
PG
because
movie.
I think it's because Disney and Pixar kind of realized at this point parents have really got no sense of what's the word. There you go.
But I think it's also just it's
tact.
It
tact.
Speaks to how video games have changed our culture, like because kids are playing video games, and like the same kids who are, you know, old enough to go and see this movie are playing games that are far more violent than that.
Yeah.
But
well, I mean, not only that, and that's another good point about it. It's kids who are playing games like Call of Duty, Gears of War, you know, those kind of games. This kind of movie will reintroduce them to, like, the older stuff that we all grew up on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That might revitalize the arcade. We were talking – we had this whole lengthy discussion about how this film might be a good thing. It might revitalize the arcade industry, which would be a welcome change-up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're at the end of the show. I wasn't trying to start a whole conversation about violence and video games and all this stuff. I just think it is curious that this is probably the most, like – animated violence you're gonna see in a Disney movie that I can think of.
I will say this much: anyone else notice that slight reference to Twin Galaxies in the movie?
Well,
the arcade owner in the referee shirt.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which again, I think is a pretty like subtle reference. I think
most
culture isn't
gonna
get that.
Exactly.
Most people won't get that. Although I bet
you, King of Kong was a pretty popular movie. Like it did pretty well, but I still don't think it'd be enough that most people would get it.
Yes, right, but I guarantee you,
so.
In about a month or so, you're going to be hearing from Walter Day screaming that, oh, I was the inspiration for that.
I'm sure I was the inspiration for that entire movie.
So, No, you weren't, Walter.
I am Wreck-It Ralph.
No, you're not, Walter.
I'm going to wreck it.
No.
I'm Wreck-It Ralph. No, it's Wreck-It Ralph.
Anyway.
Okay, let's end this show. Oh, right, butt plugs.
God damn it.
Why
do you keep doing that? Stop that.
Go to www.castwavestudios.com to find more podcasting goodness. Links to shop through at Amazon, music, videos, and more.
And you can also check out Castwave Studios' Twitter account at BGN Podcast. But it doesn't stop there, because almost all of the Castwave Studios talent, if you will, all have their own personal Twitter accounts. Justin's, I believe, is JEisen88.
That is correct.
Sean's is at Sean L. Holmes.
That is correct, sir.
Mine is Colin20-something. And Brian's is B. Massey, 1987. And Sean, what else do we have?
Facebook.com/BGN Podcast.
Send us the thumbs.
Send us the thumbs.
Give
it's
us
the
your
like
thumbs.
Button. And, click the share button if you know, share it with your friends. Because, you know, what else you got to do?
Sharing is caring.
And then go to castwaystudios.com/support, where you can have a variety of ways to support the show, including, you know, shopping through us on Amazon. And, you know, Amazon has a lot of stuff. You can shop at the page, you can click through, and use Amazon's thing. Either way, it just helps keep the lights on, helps us, you know, keep this show running, because it is free.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for Boldly Going Nowhere. However, one little piece of information I'd like to pass out before we do close things up. I would like to revive an old tradition, if we could.
Okay.
I would like to, because we were talking about Star Wars, I'd like to bring back Stump a Star Wars Nerd. I think it's been way too long since we've had that.
Yes,
that would
and
be nice.
If
I would
you
like to
want
that.
To be a part of Stump a Star Wars Nerd, go to castwaystudios.com for all that information.
Yes.
It'll be there.
It's on the website. You can be an entrant.
Yes.
Click. Actually, it's castwaystudios.com/contact, and there should be a button there you can click to step a Star Wars Nerd if you want to be a participant or have a question.
It's the trivia game where you test your knowledge of Star Wars against ours in exchange for fabulous prizes.
Fabulous
prizes.
Yes. Anyway, well, that's going to do it here for Boldly Going Nowhere. So, Justin, if you want to take us home.
Well, until next time, I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakamas.
I'm Sean Holmes.
And we are Boldly Going Nowhere.
Yeah, true.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com. Wow, that sounded great.